and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation.
I think I figured out my life begins when fun ends. I got my wings. I'm free to go as I please. Yeah, I got my wings. Now nothing really pleases me till everything falls apart. Then I get to try to put it back together. Yeah, it falls.
Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Dan Kurtzky.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 564.
That's right. What are we talking about tonight?
What are we talking about tonight, Dan?
Well, I mean, I got this weird feeling, guys. I feel like an episode from the past has just materialized in front of me again. Something that we talked about in 2011 is just right in front of me. We're talking about Zero Hour.
We're timely as always, and it is timely actually for multiple reasons.
Yeah, this is what, isn't this like the anniversary of the, yes. The event?
Yeah, 30th.
30 years, man.
And it's been several years for us because that was 470 numbered episodes ago we talked about this.
God. So now you're just gonna insert that audio here, right? And then we can leave, or
that's right. We can just start rebroadcasting stuff from the archives and just be like, you know what?
well, we haven't done a Lantern Cast classic in a while.
It's true. I think we've only ever done one, right? Wasn't it?
I know. I think technically, yes. That was when you were getting your colon transplant. But yes, I think that we've only technically done one.
Was it a transplant?
I know. I like to change the story every time because I always usually refer to it as exploding, which is inaccurate either. But actually, so in retrospect, we could have almost just done a commentary track with the three of us on that image, except this episode will be shorter, so we're probably better off doing what we're doing now.
I mean, to be fair, we had Murd on at the time.
Yes, of course. And it was a good episode nonetheless, but I'm saying we don't have a great desire to spend 2 hours covering much these days.
I don't know why my mind went here, but as soon as you said colon transplant, I pictured Chad getting implanted with the colon of like a moose. So now Chad is like part moose for some reason, which I don't know what that would do for you. Maybe it makes you run faster. I don't know.
I'm very glad our show doesn't have the type of fans that create fan art, because I wouldn't be looking forward to seeing those come in the inbox.
Please have those submissions coming in quickly. Whoever Chad, has them.
Chad Bokelman, isn't it? Chad Moose Man? Anyways, bad jokes aside, why did you want to talk about Zero Hour, Mark?
It's the 30th anniversary, Chad.
Well, I mean, aside from that, you're a big fan of Parallax specifically,
as everybody knows.
And you do point, I mean, like, there's lots of, I say lots of stuff with Parallax, but like, this is kind of the pinnacle of I don't know, your probably favorite interpretation of Parallax, like when he was most what you think of when you think of Parallax, right? In terms of, as opposed to what he's been interpreted to be by other people, like in during Convergence or anything else.
God, Convergence.
Or even like, and to be fair, even things you've talked about, I can't pinpoint something specific, unfortunately, but even before what Rebirth did to the whole thing, there were times when people would write a story that either referenced Parallax or involved him in some way that you didn't particularly enjoy that interpretation, right? So why is Zero Hour it for you?
Now, I don't want to go full bore into this yet because
of course
only be yes, because it is one of stuff related to Parallax clearly is one of the talking points. But let's do broad strokes here. That yes, as for why, yes, we were talking about this. I made this suggestion last year because we knew that this was going to be the 30th anniversary of Zero Hour. And which is why I had downloaded episode 94. I hadn't been sitting there for like a year and to listen to, because I knew that that was something I wanted to do. But of course, it's less about the long-term legacy of the event itself as in what it's actually done for DC and how as far, but it's everything related to Parallax, because from the perspective that to me, this is really the defining moment of Hal Jordan as Parallax. And a lot of people will say Emerald Twilight, but to me, it's Zero Hour and Hal's role in this, which of course was originally not supposed to be. He wasn't the original conceived villain for this, which is luckily for them, I think, that they put him in, because I don't think this, as we'll talk about this, I don't think this event would be remembered much at all if not for the Hal Jordan aspect of it. But the reality is this is probably quintessential Parallax it's why Juergens ended up coming, you know, wanting him once everything that happened in Green Lantern happened. It's like it just seemed like it was such a perfect fit, which it was, that it's a microcosm of everything Hal ended up becoming and how he viewed things and why he wanted to do what he did. So let's leave it at that before we break it down. Yeah.
Well, you talk about this as being a less than memorable event without the Hal bits. And I was kind of shocked because this was the first time I've revisited Zero Hour since the last time we covered it on the Lantern Cast. And like, I was astonished at how little story is in this miniseries.
Yeah.
Like, this was a 5-issue miniseries that only had about 2 issues of story. And most of it felt like it was padded for runtime with random stuff having to, like, oh, a city just showed up in the sky and it's going to fall on another city. Gotta deal with that. Oops, we have to repeatedly battle the Team Titans a few times. And it's kind of funny, like, for most of my life, the only Zero Hour issues I had were the last issue and Green Lantern number 0, for no real reason other than the fact that I saw an all-white cover and thought that looked like neat and I'd never seen it before and I just kind of happened to get it. And rereading the trade, I'm like, no, I think I made the right decision when I was a kid.
Yeah, you did. You absolutely have the most important and the best 2 issues, even though Zero Hour One was pretty good just because of the way it ends, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first 4 issues could have been condensed down to one good, really good issue, followed by the final issue, and then Green Lantern Zero, and then we would have a very solid 3-issue miniseries.
Some of the tie-ins, and I didn't, my plan was to read them all, but there's like 40 of them, so like there's no point. I did read a couple of them. I kind of liked the Valor stuff, back when Valor was a series, I guess. I also really like the Superboy one because it takes like the clone Superboy and then the Superboy who like grew up as Superboy in Smallville acting as Superboy and paired them together, which I thought was a nice growing opportunity for the young and arrogant, stupid, you know, clone Superboy of the time who was, you know, full of himself and all that kind of stuff. And it was a really nice moment. But yeah, I was actually doing some research online because I knew I wasn't going to be able to read all of the tie-ins. And I did find a lot of people talking about how they liked a lot of the tie-ins more than the series itself. So
I did eventually read the Robin issue where it was kind of Tim Drake in his prime meeting up with a young Dick Grayson and just seeing, like, because we talk about how, like, oh yeah, Tim's the detective and Dick is the acrobat or whatever, but like seeing them actively working together when they're around the same age was like really, really cool to see. It was such a contrast of approaches.
I mean, I'm not sure which trade Dan has, but obviously, forgot your name for a second there, Chad. It's okay. I'm having a Biden-like moment. Forgive me.
He's having a senior moment. I'm sorry. Peaches. He's having a JSA moment.
Peaches.
You and I have the same hardcover graphic novel of this that from a few years ago. So if you really want to talk about how barren the actual story is by itself, go back and read like the original synopsis in the back, the breakdown by Dan Jurgens and company. And just remember when you're reading this as you're reading it, that Parallax is nowhere near this yet, because it was long before that gong went off or anybody knew that Hal was going to be what he was. But you just read that synopsis and it's like, wow, it's like this sounds completely uninteresting.
I have the what I believe to be the original trade paperback, which only collects the 5-issue miniseries and not Green Lantern Zero, which is the actual end of the story.
Yeah, it's the epilogue, which almost always gets left out in graphic novel versions of the story.
Although I think, didn't they just solicit a new collection with like this really cool cover and it has Green Lantern Zero in it?
I don't know about a solicit. I know there was a Zero Hour Omnibus.
Well, maybe that's it.
And the copy that Mark and I have something additional. We have Showcase 94 issues 8 and 9. Well, not the entire issue, but the parts of the issue that led into Zero Hour with Wave Rider and what was the other guy's name? He looks like Cable.
Yeah, you're right. That was my first reaction too. You're right.
Oh, Rip Hunter. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I forgot. Yeah. Like mine has that too.
Yeah.
And I had you don't even understand. Yeah. Like I had to read like 20 pages of Wave Rider and Rip Hunter arguing in circles with each other, and I wanted to die. This was the worst way to start a collection of any length.
Yeah, it's basically the part that gets us from Monarch to Extant, who is the same person, by the way. He just changes his name when he discovers something about himself. But yeah, that's how we get from Monarch to Extant before we jump into Zero Hour, and it's all Extant until we get to Parallax. But speaking of stories plots, Dan, why don't you tell people about this story where I'm already bad mouthing in case they've never heard of it before?
it does begin well though. The first couple of pages, the intro actually an issue, what, four? It's pretty cool.
That's true.
But then the rest happens. Only kidding.
Well, don't worry. I'm going to gloss right over it. So Zero Hour, Crisis in Time is written by Dan Jurgens with pencils by Frank Fosco, Dan Jurgens, and Jerry Ordway. Inks by Ken Branch. Letters by Starkings Comicraft and Gaspar Saldano. And colors by Stuart Chavez and Gregory Wright. So the timeline has started destroying itself from both ends, and cosmic beings like Metron of the New Gods and Wave Rider scramble to stop what is assumed to be the work of the villain named Extant, who used to be the villain named Monarch, who used to be the hero named Hawk. As time unravels, anomalies begin to appear all over the place. Past versions of Batgirl and Robin suddenly showing up in present-day Gotham City, Hawkman splitting into all of his different incarnations at the same time, all as the lines between the past, present, and future start to break down. Superman puts out a call for all the heroes to gather in New York, but the JSA decide to go on ahead. They figure that if the timeline is collapsing, they need to start looking for answers outside of time and space, so Dr. Fate transports the team to Vanishing Point, headquarters of the Linear Men, a group charged with observing and maintaining the normal flow of time. As soon as they arrive, they're attacked by Extant, who seems to be manipulating chronal energy. Extant is able to quickly and easily undo many of the forces that have been keeping the JSA young, killing several of them in the process while severely injuring and depowering the others. The only exception is Alan Scott, who's protected by the power of his ring. But Extant is clever. Since he can't seem to impact Alan directly, he instead increases the flow of time around Alan's ring, causing the 24-hour time limit to expire instantly, leaving Alan Scott powerless. Just as time is literally about to run out, all of the heroes are confronted by the actual mastermind behind all this, Hal Jordan, aka Parallax. Hal's desire to resurrect his destroyed home of Coast City has evolved. He now sees the destruction of Coast City as a symptom of a much larger problem and intends to fix everything with one grand gesture. With all of the knowledge he gained from his time serving under the Guardians and the power he stole from the Green Lantern Central Battery, Hal was able to figure out a way to reboot the universe. He traveled to the end of time, found the force of entropy, the ultimate destructive force that exists to end all things. Hal created rifts that would send entropy backwards and forwards along the timeline, nullifying everything until nothing was left. Then Parallax could fill the void with worlds of his own making, guiding their development and ensuring that everyone gets to be happy. So now all of time and space has been erased. Only a handful of heroes remain, mostly thanks to Wave Rider evacuating them to Vanishing Point at the last possible second, and they all mount one final assault on Parallax. Their plan is to absorb all the energy that Hal was using to build his new universe and then funnel it all into Damage, whose power is to create controlled explosions. Wave Rider intends to use Damage to produce a Big Bang, creating a new universe that can evolve naturally before Hal gets the chance to make his own. And thanks to the Spectre finally deciding to show up and help, the plan works. The universe is rebooted, and thanks to Wave Rider, all of the heroes who helped make it happen were placed right back where they belong, with the unfortunate exception of anyone who happened to be from alternate timelines that don't exist anymore, like Batgirl and Alpha Centurion. Kyle Rayner and Hal Jordan are missing and presumed dead, since Wave Rider lost track of them when the Big Bang went off. Green Arrow feels like crap, because this whole event has been nothing but him seeing people he cares about die, and he even shot an arrow right into Hal's chest during the climactic moment. But what none of them know is that Hal and Kyle are still alive and reemerged into the timeline on Oa in the present day. Which brings us to Green Lantern number 0, written by Ron Mars, with pencils by Daryl Banks, inks by Romeo Tangle, and colors by Steve Matson, and letters by Albert D. Guzman. Hal's power is running out, and he can't recharge himself without something like a Green Lantern ring to act as a conduit for the ambient power saturating the planet Oa. With Hal's power gone, he and Kyle are able to have an honest discussion about what it means to be a hero, what it requires of you, what it takes from you. And after some thought, Kyle decides that maybe this is the chance they both need to get their normal lives back. Kyle gives his ring to Hal, and for a moment, it looks like the classic Silver Age Green Lantern has returned. But then Hal immediately uses the ring to start draining power out of the planet Oa, so he can go back to trying to play God again. Kyle manages to get the ring back, and then blows up the planet to prevent Hal from ever recharging again. Both of them were standing on the planet when it exploded, and Hal's fate is unknown, while Kyle Rayner flies off into space as the one and only Green Lantern.
All these bastards ruining Hal's plans, man.
Yeah, I don't. You know what, Mark? It's your idea to do this. Where do you have a plan on where you want to go, or should we just start hopping around this story?
One thing. My point number one I have written down here was one of the things that I think makes Zero, even though as we've all kind of somewhat half jokingly pointed out that. Not even talking about the ramifications of Zero Hour, which is something else we should talk about at some point, as far as how successful it was or wasn't based on their goals. But the fact is, Zero Hour conceptually at least was created for a reason, a logical reason, from a editorial perspective, as a crisis event, as opposed to pretty much everything else we've gotten since, which was just created pretty much for a cash grab. That Zero Hour as an event was originally just created because Crisis on Infinite Earth solved a lot of problems they had with continuity because of having all these different worlds and all these different timelines, and they jammed them all together. So it's like, hey, there's no more multiverse, so everybody's all together in one universe. Hey, guess cool. But there are a lot of inconsistencies with ages and time frames and histories of different versions of these characters that didn't quite work well. They always use Hawkman as your quintessential example of that. So that's the real reason Zero Hour existed, was because ideally they were going to, by rebooting the timeline from the way they did from scratch, having a new Big Bang, basically restarting time in a linear fashion, everything falling into place and playing out only in one way, because it's only one universe restarting and not having people jammed in, forced, you know, like puzzle pieces forced to fit. that you were going to have a much more streamlined, much more coherent timeline going forward. And now we don't, we all know, I mean, generally speaking, it did not work really as well as they would have liked to it, for it to have worked. But I do think it's worth noting that at least, like, none of us know why the hell they did Dark Crisis. That modern day classic Dark Crisis, nobody knows other than the cash grab why that, what the purpose of that was. And the majority of Crisis events are kind of like all like almost like little vanity projects people have had. You can make a case Infinite Crisis wasn't like that, but Infinite Crisis was actually good. But I do think it's worth noting that while ultimately 0 Hour, it may not be remembered as fondly as certain other big events in DC, at least it had, there were some, I hesitate to use the word noble, but at least there were some logical creative reasons why they did that. And you contrast that with modern day DC editorial that can't spell quarantine right. There might be somebody who works there who might be able to have vision like this, but I just think it shows you also the different, how editorial worked differently and how they kind of like viewed the universe they're shepherding at the time too. But
you know, there was a moment in somewhere in here where a time traveler just looked at Hawkman and was like, oh my God, what is wrong with your timeline? Jesus, you are the problem.
Oh, is that the great picture where there's like all these multiple Hawkmen together?
I think it's before that. I think it's when Wave Rider showed up to talk to the JSA for a minute. He just like side eyes Hawkman. It's like, oh Jesus, what is with this guy?
But I think it's worth at least acknowledging that kind of was the genesis of how you got to 0 Hour, at the fact that you know, this was their first real crisis, real since Crisis on Infinite Earths, and so they tried to make it a big deal, and it tried to serve a purpose. Basically, I mean, from a rebooting perspective, it's almost like the New 52 reboot on many levels, except you can make a case this might have been more coherent based conceptually on what they wanted to do. And that's why I was kind of critical that it's like you have to literally rip time apart and restart it, because this way it's going to play out mostly the same. Good.
Sorry. Well, it's strange. Like, despite the fact that a literal universal reboot happens in the story, it feels like less of a reboot than other Crisis events have been. Because maybe it's just because, like, coming out of it, the comics I happened to be reading at the time weren't that different than they were going into it. But, like, this, one of the things that was most impressive to me about this story is that, yeah, they were doing all, like, the big crazy cosmic reboot stuff, but they were also very specifically setting up plot lines, like setting up new plot lines that were going to go forward and advancing existing ones that had already been happening. Like, so like, it's not like we were actually wiping the slate clean or anything like that. Like things like the Starman mantle being passed down to the next generation, which would lead into the James Robinson, Jack Knight series, or the Atom being
most popular one of the most popular series of the time, actually.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff. And then like the Atom being de-aged to a teenager, which would like send him off into the Titans for a long time. The birth of Power Girl's baby. I didn't remember this. Guy Gardner developing his Voldarian powers for the first time, apparently.
Yep.
And getting his new costume.
I was not paying attention to Guy's book or adventures at all back when I was first getting into Green Lantern. So I don't even know what came out when in relation to all of this. Like, was the final issue, like the end of the final issue of 0 Hour, when Guy is just suddenly magically in his like body paint warrior look, is that where that was seen first?
Maybe. I know it happened because of 0 Hour. I don't know if it was 0 Hour specifically that happened.
Yeah, because he was definitely still wearing the armor in Emerald Fallout, because when he and Hal fight, he's wearing the armor. Mm-hmm. But it's because of the Guy Gardner, the Guy Gardner tie-in issue, which is why he's got such a hate on for Extant related to Coast City, that there's no, even though he He kind of smells what Hal's cooking, but he's not quite. But he can't 100% get on board with it just because he's working with Extant, that he can't do it. Plus, he doesn't have as much incentive to do it as, let's say, like Batgirl and Alpha Centurion, because they basically are they're just looking for a world to call their own. And as opposed to, you know, it's easier for Guy because he kind of already still has one. He just wants a whole lot to keep it.
Yeah, I mean, there's other stuff too. I mean, where you talked a bit about Adam being a teenager and stuff like that. The Team Titans, who you briefly had mentioned, that they were destroyed and no longer existed. I know in what I was reading online, I think after Zero Hour, Batman never caught his parents' killer and never figured out who it was, and he was never a member of the Justice League. I know that was supposedly an effect of Zero Hour. Obviously, everything that happened with the JSA, stuff that Hawkman, they tried to fix the Hawkman stuff that was going crazy at the, you know, but they ended up making it worse, which is crazy that the simple fix was Vin Diddy, right?
Yeah.
The simple fix was Vin Diddy's idea of that the Hawks are reincarnating across time and space. Both. That's why there are multiple versions in similar timelines on different planets. So yeah, he fixed it with one quick phrase.
And it was such a stroke of genius, because it's literally plot hole proof.
Yeah, it reminds me weird tangent, very briefly. It reminds me of an episode of How I Met Your Mother, where Marshall is getting married to Lily and he accidentally shaves off part of his head, and they start coming up with ways to get him down the aisle and be presentable for pictures. And they're like, what about a Native American headdress, or maybe a toupee, or maybe we could do this or that. And at the very, very end, they finally find a fedora that someone was wearing and they give it to him, and he wears that for his wedding. And someone goes, hat. We thought of Native American headdress before we thought of hat. That's the same thing I get with Hawkman. We thought, let's merge all of the entities into one super being and try and fix it that way, before we thought, why don't we have him reincarnate across time and space?
Yeah. And at first I thought, because again, things I misremembered, I thought what this event, what Zero Hour did, was merge together all of the different versions of Hawkman into one being. But no, it merged together all of the different versions of Hawkman and Hawk Girl and some kind of Hawk God, which I don't know what the hell that's about. And all of them became one being. And it's like, how is that less confusing?
But yeah, also Legion was completely rebooted too. That was a thing. And one thing I wanted to mention too, while we're on this particular bent here, series that ended with Zero Hour, Team Titans, Legion, Valor, and Justice League International. And coming out of it, you mentioned the big one, of course, Starman being probably the most popular series in that particular character or franchise's history. And we also got Extreme Justice, Fate, Rebels 94, Manhunter, Primal Force, Starman, and Xenobrood.
I don't even know what that last one is. I think you made it up.
But yeah. What were you going to say, Mark?
I was going to say, see, they should have just let Hal win. We would have got better titles. Everybody wins if Hal wins, but not with these losers. It was a nice promotion anyway, with all the Zero issues. It was a very clever way to try to get people on board. And because I still remember back in the day, I remember I was working at Walden Books still when Zero Hour was coming out. So they all had the little toppers to put on the spinner racks for every time they had Zero issues. So they had certain the toppers you would put behind the Zero issues and things like that. It was a clever promotion, something, you know, they did kind of tap into that in the same vein, I guess, with the New 52. But look how long that was after Zero Hour.
But speaking of things that came out of Zero Hour, you know what we should really talk about? The big thing in this entire thing. The pregnant woman that's involved in the middle of this entire fight and giving birth to a baby that only appeared in two issues of Justice League and we never, ever, ever, ever heard from ever again.
I did almost until I went back and reread this thing. I almost did forget that they were make that even in the course of the actual mini, they were trying. They were seemingly making that out to be so important, even though clearly in the course of what in the course of human events that based on the way things were actually playing out, it's like, who cares? We have more. We have bigger fish to fry right now.
I mean, I feel like the entire reason you reference it in this story is so you can have that moment at the very end where it's like a moment of new life, and it's supposed to kind of be the counterpoint to the things that have been lost.
Yeah,
but it's like, but all it kind of ends up feeling like is, oh, this is what Wonder Woman was doing. She couldn't help with the thing because this was going on.
I love too that even Captain Atom tries to help, and Wonder Woman's like, no, you're a soldier. You need to be involved in the fight. And essentially, she doesn't say it. She essentially says, this is woman's work. Like, Wonder Woman. What? Also, is it the best art? Six of one, half a dozen of the other. I don't hate the art, but it does have some weird. There are moments where there are weird poses or faces, or especially group shots that don't look very well put together, like the one where everybody is showing up after Superman summons and Wonder Woman is front and center with Blue Beetle and Maxima and all that stuff. But this group shot would be so much more impressive if there wasn't a random woman in the background looking confused between Katana and Robin. Yeah. And almost looking like a because it's from such a distance and she has white hair, a short white hair, like somehow Mrs. Kent is in the background.
but she's pregnant. That's probably Power Girl.
No, it is. That's what I'm saying. Like this would be a better image without this if you had to explain this image to a non-comic book reader and kind of explain the background of some of these characters and they point to this person. Are you going? Do you think they're going to want to read this story when you go, hey, oh, that's Power Girl. She's pregnant. She's not really involved in the story. She's giving birth throughout this, and it completely takes Wonder Woman out of the story. Are they going to look at you like you're crazy, or like this is the greatest story they've ever heard of, and they should read it immediately?
Why did she show up to this?
I don't know. How she's pregnant is even crazier, but we shouldn't even get into that because we want to keep this relatively concise.
No, we should not.
When a man and a woman really like each other, Chad.
Oh, no.
You wish that's what this was.
I'm only kidding.
Jesus. Hey, speaking of a man and a woman really liking each other, which is the best segue we've ever had on this
show. Thank you. Thank you very much. Check is in the mail.
So there's a moment in here where Extent shoots like a time blast at Donna Troy. And Kyle jumps in front of her taking the shot, which, you know, you have constructs, but whatever. So he takes the shot for her. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense given their relationship. And then I realize, wait a minute, he called her Darkstar. That's kind of weird. Oh, wait a minute. He's not a Titan yet. This is the first time they met.
Yep.
Pussy whipped Kyle Rayner even then.
There was actually a lot of Green Lantern firsts and lasts in this. Like, Kyle met Guy Gardner for the first time. And, like, Guy's like, who the hell are you? And Kyle, like, mutters, like, Green Lantern. He's like, yeah, we're going to talk after this is over.
Yeah, there are definitely moments like that. I can't complain about the art for the most part. As long as it's Jurgens art, I really can't. Obviously, not everything was written 100% all Jurgens here, and at the end of the day, Jurgens still gets the ultimate credit for saying, hey, you know who'd be the really perfect villain for this story? Thanks, guys.
See, here's the thing, though, is like we were talking about how disjointed or whatever the words are we use that the story is. It's just like you can't help but compare this story to Crisis. Like it's just natural. You're going to do that. So like looking at Zero Hour, like what you were talking about, Dan, in terms of like, yeah, we're going to randomly fight Team Titans. And then also we're going to cut back to the JSA being de-aged. And we're going to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to convince the Spectre to get involved with this bullshit, like always. Also, we're going to be just randomly switching back and forth. Oh, also, our main villain for most of this doesn't really even matter because he's a puppet of Hal Jordan. And slash forgot maybe that he was. I don't know. And half of it is spent saying, I'm not Green Lantern, I call me Parallax, or I'm not Monarch, call me Extant, or hey, I take off my face, I'm Wave Rider. Like, what? there's no real story between the explanation that time is collapsing and the heroes getting together and the point where Parallax is revealed. Everything in between is almost nonsensical.
Oh yeah, it's filler. It's all filler. And I think it's completely fair to compare this directly to Crisis on Infinite Earths, because Zero Hour goes so far out of its way to try its best to look and feel like Crisis on Infinite Earths. Like, we've got the death of a Flash, supposedly. We've got the forces of entropy, which look and function exactly like the big white antimatter walls. Like, I think functionally the Team Titans are supposed to be the shadow demons in this thing. And, like, the frustrating thing is that, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths was astonishingly good at cramming in every single named character that has ever appeared in a DC comic and giving them at least a moment where, like, they are the center of the universe. They get to say and do something. And this story tries to do that, but it's more limited in scope in terms of the characters it brings in, and it feels like more of a jumble, because I'm reading a moment with the Linear Men and thinking, man, if I had been reading Linear Men for years, that probably would have mattered to me, or like all the Hawkman stuff that flew right over my head. And it's just, it feels like disjointed pieces that don't go together, but they were all published next to each other on a page.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely truth in that. No one can really, can't really deny that. It also should get credit for having a crisis event in which Batman is really completely insignificant.
And he was doing, like, crowd control, basically.
It's a rarity, and you can't necessarily say, oh yeah, they couldn't have come up with something for him to do. They could, but yeah, I think it deserves credit for the fact that, you know, they would never even try to do a crisis event like this today, in which all the other major heroes were going to be a factor, or so many of the major heroes were going to be a factor. But they kind of put him on the back burner, like you said. They kind of put Wonder Woman on the back burner, mostly because they're completely out of their league, no pun intended, and based on the threat that they're dealing with.
Also, yeah, that's a perfect example of, like, where people are saying, like, the tie-ins are better than the main series, because I forget if it was an issue of Batman or an issue of Superman, but regardless, there was a tie-in issue where Superman is called for help or something, and Batman meets him, and it's a little weird at first, and then you realize, like, this is classic Batman, who's a little more, hey, chum, and then they meet up with another Batman, who is Dark Knight Returns Batman, and then we meet up with Golden Age Batman. So, like, that premise of Superman teaming up with these various incarnations of Batman throughout the A multiverse, B timeline, whatever, is way more interesting than anything involving Batman in the main series.
Yes, and again, for me, going back and rereading this, and I think that's why ultimately the storyline still, well, I think, like I said before, the only reason I think people really remember the storyline, not just is because it's the first real attempt at any kind of follow-up to Crisis, it's just the fact that all the Green Lantern Parallax stuff is the stuff we remember for multiple reasons. Even when you go back and you read for the first time, and then as it plays out, or now for us, you know, you read it multiple times, you go back, the breadcrumbs that are being laid out that it could be Hal are pretty strong when you go back and you look at it retroactively. Even the beginning, that's why the beginning in issue 4 works, when Time Trapper gets annihilated and Time Trapper is talking Time Trapper ease, and as it turns out, it's Parallax, though we don't know it yet at the time, saying all you omnipotent types are the same, you just basically you're talking all this shit while you're getting your ass kicked and things like that. That's he's clearly referring to the Guardians, but so we know that that's what Hal has, this, like, cosmic disdain for the pseudo omnipotent types who really have all this power, but they just basically are the impotent shams, as he likes, as he referred to the Guardians, that they just have all this power, but they just won't, they won't use it, which is why he's trying to get the power. And even that one, that that scene in the beginning, when you, when you have the big 0 hour thing and you have, you know, the caped figure on the bottom, if you look at it, it makes sense that it's Hal, because you can actually see the white traces to his cape, the back of his cape, because it's pretty clear looking at it that it's not extant when you look at it. So they actually did pay attention enough to give some detail, among other beats, how he saves Alan's ring instead of, I mean, he saves Alan's ring from vanishing, even though he does step on it, which of course is a tie back, a tie in and throwback to Emerald Twilight when he stepped on his own ring. That it's, there are hints along the way. And then, of course, as you get closer to the end, it becomes clear, because X, again, like Chad mentioned, that extant is kind of like, I don't understand how this is all happening because I'm not doing any of this. And then it's like, it's almost, it's I think it's less that extant doesn't realize Hal's in charge, but I think extant thinks his role in this is more significant. and he is maybe, I think he knows he's second in command, but he thinks he's like really a powerful second in command. And when he gets a little too big for his britches, Hal has to step in and like bitch slap him and put him back in place.
So extant is the pariah, the freaking, what's the mask guy? Why did I forget his name?
Psycho Pirate.
Yeah, he's the Psycho Pirate of 0 hour. In a way, because Psycho Pirate was like promised he would rule the world or whatever. It's like he's destroying the multiverse. What world do you think is going to be left for you to rule?
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about the extant misdirect now, because it's like, feels strange to say that they didn't do enough to set him up when we got 20 pages of his origin at the beginning of this. But it was most like I joked earlier, but it was mostly Wave Rider and Rip Hunter yelling at each other. So like we saw the birth of extant and his rise to power without really understanding what he wants or why he wants it. So he kind of felt like a hollow villain, and most of the credibility of he's the mastermind doing the bad time stuff comes from the fact that, well, we saw his villain origin in the beginning, and we keep seeing the silhouette of a bad guy with a cape. I guess it's him. And it just feels so flimsy compared to when Hal shows up and explains why he's doing things, and it's actually like good.
But see, here's the other thing too, is these 20 pages or whatever of intro we're talking about with Rip and Wave Rider and everything, and they're just yelling at each other. That's written by Dan Jurgens, and we're going through this entire process of Monarch stealing the little time band or whatever from Wave Rider, and then becoming extant and all of this stuff. And then we jump into 0 hour and see Wave Rider kind of talking with various people and going through all the motions and blah, 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 blah. And then only then do we get about, I don't know, a third of the way, halfway through this story, and Wave Rider has the realization, oh, I think I know who's behind this. It's like, we just can't, like, albeit this is a collected edition, so we're reading it literally back to back, and maybe readers of 0 hour didn't read these little stories in Showcase or whatever that told the kind of prologue here, but why is Wave Rider and them only, and somehow magically also when we do see Rip and Wave Rider and everything, they're done bickering. Neither of them realize what could be causing this, even though extant, the newly minted extant, just stole a time band from Wave Rider and was talking a lot of mess that probably would lead you to believe he would do something like this.
You know, I had the realization as I read this that 0 hour as an event is basically like the first Halloween movie.
Mark's gonna like this comparison.
Yeah, well, I mean, as he should. But the whenever, like, I didn't see the first Halloween movie all the way through for the first time until a few years ago. Fantastic movie. But something that washed over me as I finished that movie for the first time is the fact that whenever anyone talks about that movie, they're talking about the last 15 minutes of that movie, and like not like the hour and a half of like moody tonal setup that like gets you primed to like jump out of your seat when something happens. Like, and like Zero Hour, literally everything I ever remember about Zero Hour is the final issue. I remember like, oh yeah, that's a good story. It's about like, it's the whole Hal Jordan thing and like the hero, like his best friends having to struggle against him for the greater good. And no, that's like, that's the end. That's just the end.
Zero Hour is basically let's put it this way. The ending is what's really good and memorable. So we know Robert Venditti didn't write.
Green Arrow is Loomis because he shoots Hal Jordan, but then when you go to check to see if he's there, he's not, his body's not there anymore. Where'd he go?
Oh. Yeah, except Loomis wasn't heartbroken after having to do it.
Listen,
Loomis would do it again. He'd do it twice on Sundays.
Maybe if Loomis had a bow and arrow, Michael Myers would have been stopped.
Here's the thing, and you mentioned that. So like that's the thing though. Is like we're talking all this about you know the bad parts of the story and how you know the good parts only the end and stuff like that. That's just it. That's what makes it more frustrating, is because the good part is the end, which tells you, and as we all know retroactively looking back on it, Dan Jurgens is a good writer. He's done some good stuff. So then why is the rest of this so confusing and haphazard when we get something like the final page of the penultimate issue, things fade to black or white or whatever and just kind of fade off the page. And then the intro page is a fade in, and there's the emotional beats of Green Arrow struggling with what to do, and I wouldn't say it's a super emotional, but the emotional death of Batgirl and everything else that happens, the fight and struggle with the Spectre back and forth and all of these various things, he is capable of really good storytelling. So why couldn't he do it for the first several issues? And my only thing is, and you can talk about the foreword or any sort of creator notes or script notes or whatever you want, retroactively speaking, but isn't the mess of Zero Hour more on DC editorial than it is on the creative team? It feels like an easy out, because that's something we do a lot, is just be like, oh, DC editorial is screwing up here, 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 and here. And it's a theme that even continues today, which I will rant very in the near future about DC editorial. So it goes on even today. But isn't it fair to say that the mess of Zero Hour is not solely on Dan Jurgens' head here?
Yes, well, completely. Specifically, yeah. Because this is their big summer event. So this is the blockbuster that's supposed to like support them for like a big chunk of the year and like generate all this interest and launch all these new titles and all that stuff. So like of all the books that Dan Jurgens would not be given carte blanche to do whatever he wants with, this is going to be that one. This is the book that every editor under the sun is going to be coming to him saying like, hey, you need to do this, or hey, you can't use that, or no, that character wouldn't, like that character has to be doing this. And I think it's very telling that the end of the story is when literally all the parts of the DC universe he doesn't need or want to use are just removed from the comic. And he gets to focus on like his handpicked set of characters. And that's when the story really picks up, because like that is Jurgens being Jurgens.
It's also possible that number one, maybe they thought that the way they were building it up would be less of a problem because it was weekly. Because we do have to remember this was a weekly event. This wasn't a monthly like we're used to. This was weekly. This was for five straight weeks. It's also possible that, and maybe it would have been different, like I said, if you read the original treatment or whatever for Zero Hour, it didn't sound particularly better, just with inserting some villain that we never heard of named, you know, placeholder named Dynasty instead of Parallax. I think that it's possible that the way it was conceived, the ending was always going to be the part that was going to have the biggest payoff and be most interesting. Because if and it maybe became even more so once it was decided upon that it was going to be Hal. Because number one, that clearly was going to have a huge impact on people, making Hal Jordan, you know, who people were still upset about, had just become, which we didn't know. You know, obviously that's another famous thing that this event is known for, because that's where we get the Parallax name, the actual naming, the official naming of him Parallax. We know Darryl wanted him to be Parallax all along, and DC resisted, but that once Hal was decided to be the big bad, and they knew this was going to have big ramifications, that maybe a little bit, it's hard to say too much effort and too much, but too much focus was spent on the last two issues. But it's still almost good enough to salvage the event. I mean, if you're reading it weekly and you go from 4 and 3 and 2, it's like, okay, there are some cool things here. There are some not so cool things here. But once you get to the end of 1 and you get to 0, I mean, it's, and again, it's being biased because of the fact that there's so much good Hal stuff in this book. Once he steps out of the shadows, knocks Superman on his ass with one punch, and then reveals his new name and reveals what his plan is and why he's doing what he's doing and everything else that and how he's doing what he's doing. It just kicks it up to another level. So your analogy to Halloween on that level, it's not so much, I think a lot of people do like all of Halloween, but you were correct. Once you kind of get to at least the part where Laurie goes across the street and finds all the bodies to the end of the movie, that it just kicks it up to such a notch that that's the part everybody remembers. And that is that's part of why people remember it so in a positive way, not because you necessarily disliked everything that came before, but because it just was, once they grab you at that moment until the end, yeah, they never let go. And it's kind of like this. Once Hal steps out of the shadows, this thing just kicks up such a notch, and it becomes, even at the time when you were reading it, it became much more relevant. And then now you look back at it, that again, this is the defining moment to me for Hal Jordan as Parallax. Not just what he's doing, but what he's saying, and we understand the rationale with what he's doing.
Yeah. I just think too, and it's just, you know, it's just an example of another example of the stuff before the Parallax reveal and it being underutilized. It's just like, we could touch on other things, guys. We could touch on one of the other things that jump out to me. Martian Manhunter's biggest moment is taking the JSA to the hospital. Someone with the power of Martian Manhunter, his biggest moment is picking up some pavement and taking them to the hospital.
Yeah, and by the way, of all the ways a superhero could take someone to the hospital, they're on the street. Let me lift the entire street above my head and carry it to the hospital. Like, there's like 50 heroes here. A couple of you can run them over to the hospital.
Yeah, there's another example, a quick example, Aquaman. Poorly underutilized throughout this. There's even a point where they make a panel or two of him just being completely overwhelmed while holding his bandaged hand or stump, I guess, whatever. Like he's completely ineffective. Wonder Woman's delivering a baby. Like there's so much underutilized potential here that it's insane. But yes, I think you're right that it speaks to the quality of Dan Jurgens as a creator and writer. It speaks to the quality of the story itself of Hal Jordan and Parallax. It speaks to the overreaching power of DC editorial in creative decisions. But the fact that it's 30 years later, and despite all the bullshit that we're harping on right now, it's a relatively fondly remembered story. For the sake of one issue, well, 1 and 1.2 issues.
So it's like the reverse Game of Thrones. It's like how everybody hates the final episode and a half because it ruined the show. People remember the final issue and a half of Zero Hour because even if you don't think it necessarily saved the series, that's what people remember. And it's like, wow, that was really powerful stuff.
You know what I wonder? Because this series was released like, what was it, issue 4, then issue 3, then 2, then 1, then 0? Yeah. I wonder how many people who came to this after the fact, like years later, saw issue zero and started there.
I did.
I mean, I did too.
I did until I wrote emails to you guys. I don't think it was one of the ones that, I don't think it was a direct question I asked you, but it was because I was listening to the Lantern Cast at the time, because that's how I started, right? I was writing you guys emails and like fan theories and stuff like that. But all along the way, as a new reader, you guys through your podcasting was educating me about the history of Green Lantern and things I did know or didn't know. And at one point you guys had mentioned Zero Hour, and it's like, I got an issue that way. No, that's why, because they did it that way. So that was literally my experience.
Yeah, I like, I kind of like on paper the idea of like, let's count down to it, but it'll be interesting. But it's kind of, I don't know, a little confusing.
I think it's more confusing. I think you alluded to it, looking at it through the prism of now, because we're so used to zero. We're so used to zero issues sometimes being like the preview issue or like a free comic day issue or something that's about to start and things like that. Or they just throw in a zero issue to try to fill in some background for stuff. So it definitely is supposed to take place before other stuff. I do think it was clever. I do think it was clever, and kind of as the clock was ticking down, and I do think that works kind of like almost how like that one of the last images in issue number one is like the reverse of what we of that one of the first images we see in number four, like I described, when you see the back of the character with the cape and, you know, really small and what the foreground, and the reality is then how they reverse it, and then now you clearly see that it's Hal, and when he's announcing this is Zero Hour, that
so I think if we're okay to start wrapping up, I think I have a question I want to ask, because it's the perfect time to ask it. We are a month and a half right now, as we record this, a month and a half from the Zero Hour 30th anniversary special that was recently announced. And it's got a lot of talent, including Dan Jurgens and Ron Mars and Paul Pelletier and Jerry Ordway and so on and so forth, including Daryl, that are involved in this thing. And Mark, you have said all along that there's one Parallax story you've always wanted told. So before we get a new Parallax story that's specifically a 30th anniversary connected special for Zero Hour, before we know what's in that issue, aside from the solicits, what do you hope to see in the 30th anniversary special?
I have to like color this with the fact that the solicits already give us a hint of what we're not going to see, you know, in the sense that it doesn't imply that this is just an alternate timeline where Hal just succeeded completely in Zero Hour. But it does imply that this is going to be some variation on Zero Hour where Hal succeeded enough, where at least he got a world out of this and he took her with him somewhere. So it would be really interesting to see what a world in which Parallax has created. He is the active guardian of this. If he's not a guardian of a universe, he has the way he's the active guardian and protector of this planet. How that world looks, how it operates, who has survived either amongst the people who were his allies, how he got there, basically. Like you and I talked about, I speculated when we talked about the solicits for this 30th anniversary issue. They talk about how there's a world that, you know, has survived, and Parallax has survived. That it could be as simple as this world survived because Hal kind of went about what he was doing in a half-assed kind of way, that he was recreating everything all at once. That maybe this is going to be a timelines of Zero Hour where Hal was kind of smart. And it's like, I went through all this heavy lifting and I'm going to create world by world in order. So I'm starting with my world first. I'm creating my Earth first. And everybody else get in line to get yours. I'm getting mine first because I'm the one who's done the heavy lifting here. And maybe that's the world that was created before everybody tries to stop him. And then he had to make a decision at the end of the day. I could stay and fight and lose it all, or I've recreated this world. Let me just take this world and take it out of this universe and take it somewhere else. I certainly do not want to see, which answers your question in the opposite way. I do not want to see a friggin' fear bug infected Hal all the time, jagged teeth, all this bullshit. I would actually love it if it was the opposite, where Hal kind of figured out that he was being influenced by this and kind of like put it in its place, if necessary, or even removed it from himself. But because it's not like Parallax wasn't really giving him the power. I mean, he got the power from the central power battery and absorbing the energies from left over from Crisis and all this stuff. So I do not want this to be heavy fear entity Hal Jordan Parallax, because we've had enough of that shit. It's pointless to revisit classic Parallax if you're just going to go down that road. And I don't want it to be where, and they hinted at this at the end, which could just be to sell books. They hinted that maybe whatever we get out of this isn't, it's going to be an opening to see more of either this world or this version of Parallax. So those are the things I really would like to get out of this.
I was just saying, I'm really curious as to, like, what is the story justification for it? Like, is this a thing that Hal time traveled and did before he was ultimately defeated in Zero Hour? Or is it a multiverse, like, another version of this that played out in a different world in the multiverse? Like, is this somehow convergence parallax? I don't know. Like, And I guess the big question I have is this really just going to be a one shot, or is this the start of something else?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots to be curious about, especially in that main cover image where you have Black Suit Supergirl, we have Donna Troy Wonder Woman. We're pretty sure based on the costume design and everything, the blue suit. We have Batgirl, which we see in this thing. Emerald Empress is there. Jack Knight, Starman, and Connor Hawke are there. So there's lots to be curious about there and the specific characters they use. And like you mentioned, Mark, it's interesting to see what happens in the story of Zero Hour itself after Dan Jurgens got to kind of throw away everything he didn't want at the end.
And I think the setup for this is interesting, too. We don't know why Kyle is going to be the one who ends up seemingly stumbling upon this world. So that will be, that might be curious too, and that might potentially be telling why he's the one who ends. So that makes you wonder too. You assume it's going to be in current continuity that he finds this world, but maybe it's not. Maybe this is another time traveling thing, or something that Kyle was doing in the past, or I don't think that's likely. But again, it's interesting that, and it makes sense when you're doing the callback to the original event, that it's not Hal facing off against Parallax or discovering a world in which, hey, this is Parallax, not Convergence Parallax, but another Parallax in which he succeeded in, at least partially succeeded in Zero Hour, including the idea that if Hal did create a world for, he created things in a different fashion, and that's why he was able to salvage something. And if he took all his allies with him and everybody, all his supporters with him into this new world, that he would probably have people who would be not happy with the fact that, okay, you got yours, but we never got ours. So you would have basically almost have a natural built-in resistance, or some people in his inner circle would be unhappy and willing to basically coup d'etat time at the right moment because the fact that you promised us all the stuff and you didn't deliver.
I'm just happy that the Ray looks like he's going to be in it. That guy never gets the attention he deserves. I do love how weird this final strike team of heroes is in the original Zero Hour. I mean, when you think of like the team of heroes you're going to put together to fix and reboot the universe, you don't think of like, okay, Damage, Green Arrow, the Ray, Hawkman, Darkstar. Like it's such like a weird hodgepodge of characters, and like talk about things that we want to see contemporary events do more often, like put more weird teams of characters together and have it make sense. Like every character in here has a purpose.
That is true. That's what I was thinking when you were talking about it. It's the fact that the team was put together obviously for a reason, especially because we know what Damage's role was.
But you would expect, like, okay, well, we have to put Batman in it because Batman's popular, and then we have to, like, it would be more of, like, a popularity contest than it would be, like, what's functional for the story. And this one, like, the most you could argue is, well, Superman has to be there, but they also needed somebody who could, like, fight Hal while everybody else did the plan.
I think interesting too, and it's something I forgot about because my Legion knowledge isn't completely up to date. I think I'm very, very curious, and this will be a part Mark is not as excited about, at what role the Fatal Five plays in all of this from Legion. Because, yes, we have Emerald Empress, but we also have Therek and Persuader and Mano and the big guy in the background, that's Validus. So all of those are members of the Fatal Five. And Validus being so huge and in the background behind Parallax, that's interesting to me. It's also always interesting to me, too, when you involve Emerald Empress in a story that involves Green Lanterns. Because they've always hinted at a connection or sometimes outright said something about a connection, but never actually firmly established that. So
we will see.
We will see. When does this come out?
At the end of August.
Oh, geez.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, there is one world that Parallax created that does exist still in somewhere. That's the world that he created in Unholy Alliances with the Silver Surfer when he had the power cosmic. The world the Cyborg Superman destroyed. He recreated that world. So in theory, there is one world that was created by Parallax, not in Zero Hour, of course, but that should still exist because that was in the Marvel universe.
God, what if Silver Surfer just shows up?
All right, what else about Zero Hour should we touch on? Anything else you wanted to check off your checklist, Mark?
My checklist, which is funny, which I just closed, because I think we did cover most of it. So things that I still want to talk about are just, like I said, it's hard to talk about Zero Hour in general without just reflecting on the Parallax role more, not just because he is what people remember about Zero Hour. Like if they had gone with a generic newly created villain, probably nobody would remember Zero Hour, even if it was turned out to be extant. People probably wouldn't remember it all that much. It's because of the surprise and the ramifications of making it Hal. It also pretty much defined what Hal's mantra was at Parallax. A lot of the sayings we associate with Parallax and the way he viewed things, a lot of them come from Zero Hour just as much, probably more, even more so than some of the things that, you know, maybe some things that Ron probably did like in Parallax View, but, or even the aforementioned Silver Surfer, Green Lantern crossover. But a lot of those things about needing, you know, it's setting things right. The universe needs me. Everybody wins. All these things that the Parallax view of, no pun intended here, that his view of the universe comes from this. It comes from this story. And just the albatross on the negative end of this, too, about what really made Hal borderline and arguably irredeemable came from this story. Didn't come from Emerald Twilight, really. Emerald Twilight, in the big picture, you could have explained away or swept some of the things in Emerald Twilight under the rug, especially if you could have figured out a way that Kilowog wasn't really dead. Pretty much everything else would be acceptable because it's not like anybody really cared about Sinestro dying, and he didn't kill any of the other Lanterns. And the Guardians, if they were really dead, they sacrificed themselves. He didn't kill them, really. So you could have come back from Emerald Twilight a lot easier than Zero Hour. Zero Hour is what it's in the DC world is what got him in purgatory, because even saving the world in Final Night wasn't enough to get that red out of his ledger. So to me, that's why this is the defining moment for Parallax, how we view him as during that time frame. And I think that's pretty much, I think, all I really have to add now.
I think bringing up Final Night, I think in terms of a consistent, interesting story from start to finish, I think I might put Final Night above Zero Hour. Like, same. I'm not talking in terms of importance or whatever, but just in terms of how much of the story do I want to put in the trash and how much do I want to keep? I think Final Night, and including also like, actually, I don't know about the tie-ins. I think that the idea of each, and it's not like every tie-in did this, but the idea of each character encountering different versions of either other superhero colleagues or themselves or whatever
is interesting, but there's also, and I've said this before about Final Night, there's also something interesting about just a super basic premise of the sun is out. How do we survive? What are the heroes doing? And there's such a simple premise as opposed to time is collapsing, entropy, different versions, blah, blah, blah. And the insanity that we get in Zero Hour that I think as a story, like I prefer Final Night to Zero Hour overall.
Yeah, Final Night is a better story. And like you said, it's down to earth. It's more grounded. It's Final Night feels more human, and Zero Hour feels like a cosmic, what the fuck is happening? Why is Green Arrow here kind of story.
But Final Night was never supposed to be, as big or have that kind of universal impact as what Zero Hour was. The goal wasn't the same. The methodology of coming up with the it's a better ending. I mean, for Hal. I mean, I'm not going to argue that it's I do think you could argue that it's not necessarily that much of a better story because it's a basic premise. But it's just kind of like the same thing every week. It's like the same thing every issue except it's getting colder. it's like this week with more snow. So I think that's still arguable, but as far as the impact in the defining moment, I mean, it works because, as Hal said in Zero Hour, it's like basically from, as he said in Final Night, that from his perspective, he wasn't doing anything different in Final Night than he was doing in Zero Hour, because in Hal's mind, he was still always trying to, you know, that great quote about it, I've always done what I truly believe was right. First, they called me a hero for it, then a villain. That in his perspective, he was always doing what was right. He was just looking at things from a different perspective. So Final Night was no different to him. This was the right thing to do. And that's why he did it. But I can see why it's a little more coherent. And it's also a much smaller thing. It's almost like it's like comparing this absolute power garbage to Dark Crisis, or Dark Crisis failed horribly, but Dark Crisis at least was supposed to be much bigger conceptually. Certainly, Infinite Crisis was much bigger than something like Final Night from the ramifications of what it theoretically would have accomplished if the heroes hadn't won.
Absolute Crisis, I actually have hope for. Like, I have the first issue, I haven't read it yet, but from what I understand, it's...
Did you say Absolute Crisis?
Yeah, he did say that. He threw me off for a second.
You know what? Give them three issues. It will be Absolute Crisis.
And then after six, it'll be absolute dog shit.
but like, from what I understand, they're not doing multiverse stuff. They're not doing time travel. It's just, hey, all the heroes are on Earth right now, and they're all dealing with a thing. Like, honestly, Final Night is a thing that I thought about in a context of what Absolute Crisis, damn it, seems to be. What is this called? Absolute Power. Jesus. Yes. Okay. Maybe when I actually read it, I'll learn the name.
Not according to Chad.
Yeah. Amanda Waller shouldn't be an out-and-out villain. Yeah. It's just my idea. But anyways, also Zero Hour starts the whole domino effect of, we had Crisis, and Crisis was a multiverse story. Now we have Zero Hour, Crisis in Time. Now we have Identity Crisis. Now we have Infinite Crisis. Oh, also, there's the Dark Multiverse. That's a crisis. Oh, also, did we mention there was a multiverse of multiverses?
And then there's the Final Crisis. Don't worry, there definitely won't be any dark ones after that. Yeah.
But again, give Zero Hour its due. At least Crisis is only basically its subtitle. Crisis in Time, but the actual event is just Zero Hour, : Crisis in Time.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, the last thing I want to say is I was just looking up listings for the different collections of this event, and it's interesting to me to see kind of the sliding scale of how DC does and does not care about spoilers for this story that has a it kind of hinges on a surprise reveal of who the villain is. Because the trade I have has, and the cover is an image of all the heroes running towards the reader, you know, Batman front and center, just like in the story. And and in the back, behind all of them at the top, is a giant Hal Jordan reaching out with his left hand at the reader. And on like the 25th anniversary omnibus that they published, it's the exact same image, except they replaced Hal with Extent.
That's the back image of our trade.
That's what I was waiting for when he was describing it, and I'm looking at it as he was talking. So is he going to say Extent on the top? Because I figured he was. I knew he wasn't, because I remember the original very thin trade paperback collection of Zero Hour, I think, and that had relatively thin. And that did have the Hal image on it. But yes.
My trade just has part of the Broken Clock logo on the back.
Speaking of the trade, Dan, did you in your search, did you see the 2018 hardcover that Mark and I have?
Is it the one that's like it's the mostly green cover with Hal like in the front?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one that I thought was new.
Yeah, that's 28. That's quote unquote the new one.
Okay.
Yeah, the newest one. Mark and I both have that.
Great cover art.
It is. It's looks really.
It is. Yeah. It's from. But I think it's almost like the opposite now. I think when it comes to this, it's like you almost have to sell this because of the Parallax, the Hal Jordan tie-in, because that's what makes Zero Hour special and memorable. So to kind of hide that actually probably defeats the purpose of anybody having an interest in reading it, because almost everybody knows even by lore now about Hal being, you know, in Parallax being the, you know, being the big bad and that event. So it's almost like you're better off advertising him on the cover because it reminds people, oh, this is that story.
True. Yeah. Besides, who knows who Extent is?
That's true.
Cool. Nobody else.
I like this costume though.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The design is just minimal enough to avoid being too busy. Like all the solid black kind of makes space for all the wild stuff going on with his cape and everything.
And we know why he had to have a cape no matter what.
Absolutely. That was the linchpin of this entire thing.
Well, let's put it this way. If they hadn't given Hal the cape in Emerald Fallout, which, of course, I'm a big champion of the cape. I always will be. But if they had gone with the original look, the next time wouldn't have had a cape. All right, Dan, what do you have to push?
Oh, who, me? Oh, well, yeah. Over on my YouTube channel, Mosaic Comics, I am slowly but surely getting caught up on the quote unquote new issues of all the Lantern books. I've got like, I believe I'm only behind by 9 issues at this point. I haven't read the final issue of the Alan Scott miniseries. That's up next. I'm gonna be sad to see that book go. And I'm currently, just for reference, I just read the issue, I forget the number, where Hal goes underground and finds something really cool. So yeah, I'm sure there's all sorts of wild bullshit that I'm on the verge of learning. I can't wait. And if you want to see my reaction to all that, go on over to Mosaic Comics. I've also got some audience Q&A videos going up, which are always a ton of fun. And yeah, it's rolling right along and having a good time.
Yeah. Really, really, really quickly, because we'll actually talk about it on a future episode, but I just wanted to briefly mention it because it's exciting. McFarlane Toys is making a Ragman figure, and I'm very excited. Go check out the suitofsouls.blogspot.com for information on it. I'll talk about it more later on. This is not the place for me to expand on it, but this is the first recorded episode since the news dropped, and I'm super psyched. So, yeah.
Chad used up all of his life's worth of luck in manifesting this figure. It's all downhill from here.
And it's a really damn good figure.
and Chad will do everything he can to get the main figure and the variant figure have to compete with those other 5 Ragman
fans. I look forward to seeing the video of Chad going into his local Walmart or whatever, dressed in full Ragman cosplay to buy this Ragman figure.
This is when you can order online, right, Chad?
I believe so. I was told pre-orders open on the 12th online,
And I think I'm going to go through Big Bad Toy Store.
Okay, so it's not a McFarlane. I should have been more clear. I thought, for some reason, I thought it was a McFarlane site exclusive, but it's not. You think it's going to be one of those that's going to show up everywhere?
Yeah, it's a McFarlane collector's edition like the Alan Scott figure was.
Okay.
Where it comes with that card with the stand and all that stuff.
Well, you can't make a Ragman figure exclusive. Think of the riots.
Yes. I'll talk about it more in detail on a future episode, but this is a specifically dedicated episode. I didn't want to go on too long about it, so.
Wise plan, Chad. All right, so for us, lanterncast.com. Email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, in quotes. Like us on Facebook, hashtag Geocast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, whatever platform you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Lanterncast Vids is our YouTube channel. If you like our Discord information, please email us at lanterncast@gmail.com. And last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Ooh, time.